Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. Listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Happy Monday to everybody, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, my co-host and producer extraordinaire, Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everybody.
And today's show is going to be all about yogurt.
Yes.
We are lucky to have back with us on the show Lorraine Lewandowski, who is a farmer upstate New York. Yep. Was recently at the New York State Yogurt Summit. Lorraine, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us again. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it's great to be on. I was really so lucky to be able to attend the Yogurt Summit. It was invitation only, limited attendance, and I took detailed notes, and I'm glad that your listeners want to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would love to get a recap. Now, was this summit organized by Governor Cuomo, or who was behind the organization of it?
Actually, it was Governor Cuomo organized it. It was precedent-setting. There has never been a summit or a dairy summit in New York that I know of in my lifetime where a governor sat for 3 hours along with the Speaker of the New York State Assembly and spoke with people in the dairy industry and then stuck around later to ask questions and interact with people. So I would say it was precedent-setting.
Wow, that's really great. And so what was the format of the summit? Was it kind of an open call where dairy farmers could come and meet with these top officials, or was it more formal?
No, it was very, I think it was very prearranged. There was a panel, a group of representatives from the top yogurt processors themselves who were at the table. There was sort of a round table discussion, but only the people who had been invited to present could speak. So we had representatives of Pepsi, who will be building North America's largest yogurt plant in Batavia, New York. We had Alpina, who is a also building in Batavia, New York. They're based out of Colombia, Latin America. They control 70% of South American yogurt. We had the Faye yogurt plant that's built in Johnstown, New York. And, of course, we had Chobani, who is now hitting $1 billion in sales of Greek Whoa. Yogurt based out of New York.
Wow.
So they were at the table, representatives of Farm Bureau, the governor's chief of staff, Larry Schwartz, some of the leaders of some of the largest farms or farm cooperatives in the state. There was one farmer who was milking 199 cows who spoke, but it was more emphasis on the processors, but it was very informative. I learned a lot, and just picked up a few things that I like to talk with you about as you get to the questions.
Yeah, well, I would be, since we weren't there, I would be curious to know, what did you think were the things, the big takeaways that that really, touched you the most about the conference?
Well, the big takeaway, first of all, was the phenomenal growth of yogurt manufacturing in New York.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, we really didn't seem to have all that much interest from yogurt companies. We had, 5 years ago, there were 14 yogurt companies, and we've gone to 29. So aside from the big ones, we've had a wide variety of others, too. Some of these smaller companies, like, say, Siggy's, Icelandic Skyr, and a variety.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of New York milk that is now going into yogurt is staggering. We produce upstate about 12.7 billion pounds of milk, and we're up to 1.2 billion pounds of milk going into yogurt. So that's about 9% of our milk is now going into yogurt manufacturing. I just calculated out before I went on the air what that would equate to in, like, say, like those little 6 ounce Chobani cups.
Uh-huh.
That would equal 1.3 billion of those cups.
Wow.
In New York last year.
Wow.
Well, it's in terms of yogurt for feeding, well, New York City and beyond. So the size, just the scale of it is staggering. You know, mm-hmm. It's very, very big. The other thing that, the governor impressed me in that he asked the people there what they thought would be most helpful. And each of the processors spoke about things that they need, which were interesting, like way management, research and development, ancillary jobs, you know, training, better power sources, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The farm groups were, to me, seemed like they were represented more with larger farmers. Almost all of the farmers seated at the table were milking like 400 plus cows. Mm. Some of them, one farmer introduced himself as controlling some huge percentage of New York State's milk. So the average farm in New York is about 100 cows right now. So I didn't really see much representation from the 100 cow farm at the table. Right now we have probably about half of New York's milk is produced on farms that are less than 200 cows in size. That's about 4,455 farms. But the larger farmers seem to be the ones that were really handling the discussion. You know, maybe next time this will be different. I did walk up to the governor and complain to him about that.
Good for you.
So maybe, you know, perhaps it'll change. But, you know, in New York, as around the country, we are seeing some of the larger farms coming online. We have 17 farms now that are 2,000 cows or more. You know, another 17 farms are in the 1,500 to 2,000 cow category. So we're seeing a growth of the very larger farms, and that's primarily in western New York with the, you know, they have a lot bigger flat land, open land, corn growing land.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other regions of the state are geared more towards grazing. You know, my part of the state, which is central New York, is almost all medium-sized farms and probably 80% of the farms in my particular co-op are out grazing their cattle every day of the week as weather permits. So I was struck by that difference, and I'm hoping that future summits, and the governor did say that there are going to be some future summits, will incorporate more of the smaller farmer. I was also a little bit sad that there were no young farmers. We're always talking about needing young farmers. I didn't see too much discussion of you know, bringing some very young farmers to the table to talk about what it is they would need when all of us old geezers are gone. You know, we definitely need, you know, our age is getting, I think the average age is something like 57 now in New York for a dairy farmer.
Mm-hmm.
We really need the young farmers at the table, so I'm hoping we'll see more of that. But all in all, it was a good start, and I'm hoping that there will be some future yogurt summits to talk about where else we might be headed in New York and other issues.
Now, I have a question. Now, you were saying that a lot of the big farms were speakers at this conference. Would you say that these yogurt companies are buying milk equally from the big farms and from small farms, or do you think the small farms are left out of the picture?
No, I think they're buying equally from big and small, but it would depend on the company and where they're located. For example, Chobani is located in the central New York area, where it's predominantly the smaller and medium-sized farms. Where Pepsi is locating, which will be in Batavia, it's very much large farms that surround the future Pepsi facility.
And so, is this because, you know, of the geography that you were mentioning earlier?
Geography. Okay. Their supply chain will undoubtedly come from much larger farms from New York, and probably one of the representatives from another company told me that Pepsi will probably be bringing in milk from other parts of the country as well. So the location could be critical. The Fayette plant is located right here in central New York as well, right along the Thruway in the Johnstown Industrial Development Park. They are getting milk from the co-ops in my area, which are, you know, our co-op had approached them. And they were excited about getting milk from regular farms that are grazing every day. So we are currently supplying them with milk. So you know, they're all adding to kind of diversify the dairy landscape and give us another alternative in terms of where we're going to be marketing milk.
And I have another question. I mean, Sophie and I were talking about the pros and cons of this yogurt boom in New York State. And one of the cons that Sophie actually brought up was the fact that some of these producers and some of the governor's plans are focused more on the larger farms, which can definitely produce more milk, but maybe would do so at an adverse cost to the environment and to the animals.
Now, some of the environmental groups are already protesting. What came out of this particular conference was the governor proposed, after listening to the few farmers who spoke, that he would loosen the regulations on CAFOs, those are the concentrated animal feeding operations, so that you could increase your herd size from 199 cows to 299 cows without coming under the CAFO regulation. So I understand that we'll be subject to hearings, and everybody will have an opportunity to speak on that, but that's the proposal on the table. The woman who spoke, Carrie Adams from Ontario County, stated that she wants to expand beyond 199 cows. That would normally cost, add on another debt of $1,200 per cow, but if you have to require compliance with CAFO regulations, that adds on another $2,400 per cow. So the debt load being taken on if you want to expand under the current CAFO regulations is pretty staggering. It can't cash flow given the current milk price situation. So that was, you know, one. It seemed to be more of encouraging growth of turning smaller or medium-sized farms into bigger farms.
And what's
you know, the other thing emphasized was methane digesters. So this would be where you have some of the larger farms that, you know, the animals are indoors all day, so the manure is gathered and concentrated into a methane digester. So that's a different approach. It's not as useful in my area. My area, the cows are out grazing, you know, it's totally a different approach to dairy farming. So this is where I would like to see things too. And if you're going to, I did tell this to the governor as well. I don't know if he listened to me, but I did give him credit. He did mingle with the people out in the audience and did go and talk with me, just a regular farmer who approached him. You know, and I stated that if you're going to incentivize the big farms, you should be incentivizing the 4,500 smaller farms as well, that, you know, we are the people who are grazing. We have 3 million, I told him we have 3 million acres of abandoned grazing lands in New York right now. You know, everywhere we look up here, there are abandoned fields that were previously used for grazing of animals and dairy and beef. So I'm not sure. I'm going to try to follow up with an email, but I would hope that there will be some things along those lines. In New England, the New England Farmers Union is talking about the great potential on grassland dairies of carbon sequestration. Some of the farms are actually carbon negative. Biodiversity on grasslands. You know, all of the great things that I think of when I see the grazing herds or farms that are at least grazing part-time, if not all of the time. So I would like to see some incentivizing of the grassland farms and taking advantage of all the great grass that we have that has actually come through this drought 2012 in pretty good shape.
Absolutely. I feel like New York is in a great position as with regards to other places in the country. And it's almost like returning to our roots, because originally that's why dairying moved from other New England states like Vermont into New York, because the land was so much more favorable.
Oh, exactly. You know, and we're seeing the farmers in some of the other states that rely on purchase feed more are struggling.
Anyone who's buying.
Disaster zone. California just set up a dairy farmer suicide hotline. They have bankruptcies of major dairies going on in several of the counties. There's just mass suffering out there. So New York, I was so pleased with our grasslands this summer that, even when the water table was dropping, the grass was still producing quite well, and no rain, and it still held strong. So that just tells you, yes, exactly, and it's just as our roots.
Wow. And so another environmental issue that Sophie brought my attention to that Governor Cuomo was mentioning was the fracking issue. He was talking about relaxing some of the laws about fracking to allow fracking on some of this farmland that would, you know, be in dairy.
Correct. And there was a demonstration going on as we went into the yogurt summit. As all the dairy dignitaries were going in, you had to go through a gauntlet of people dressed in cow suits holding up signs saying, save our yogurt, no fracking. So, yeah, so the fracking demonstration was occurring right outside of the conference. So I did go up and talk to a few of the, you know, the cows, people dressed in cow suits, about the fracking issues. And there was a letter distributed signed by dairy farmers who are opposed to fracking in parts of the state. So that is another issue that will impact the farmers. Farmers are torn on that, pro and con. I know of some young farmers who really want to frack their land because they feel this is the only possible way they're going to survive financially. And then I know of other farmers who are very worried that they don't want to compete with fracking companies for water. They don't know what are in chemicals that go into the fracking process. So it's kind of, it's almost farmer against farmer.
So now I'm reading that there is, you know, from these yogurt companies, there's need for more and more milk as this, you know, very thick yogurt gains popularity. So would you advocate for more smaller farms that are, you know, possibly a little more environmentally friendly, or would you?
Yeah, personally, I mean, that's my personal cup of tea, and that's what I think really suits the resources of, you know, various regions of the state. The North Country is extensive. Grasslands already has a small farm base. Central New York does. You know, we're producing like a third of the milk for the state based off of the farms. I guess in my co-op, the largest farm is 200 cows that are being grazed. And in the Mohawk Valley, we have some farms that go up to 500 in size. We do have I have some concerns with some of the very largest of the farms. The model is different. What we have on some of the very largest farms are all immigrant workers who basically send every penny home. If immigrant workers were suddenly not available, that model is not necessarily sustainable. We also see where some of the communities that have only one large farm, they have lost their critical infrastructure where they might have had a main street before that was supported by dozens of smaller farms. So it really lends a totally different atmosphere in an area when you have one large farm as opposed to, say, 20 to 50, 100 large or smaller size farms. So it gives a different flavor. Another consideration, though, you know, when I've thought about this, it affects people in New York City. New York City, and I met a really interesting person who talked to me at the Yogurt Summer about food security. In thinking about New York's countryside, New York City people need to think about it because New York City has a 3-day supply of food on its shelves. After 9/11, food security experts were tasked with looking at New York and how it could survive food-wise in the event of an emergency or something. He told me that New York is importing, 95% of its food coming in via truck, long haul, and that food security experts were concerned in terms of having more food available locally. So that, you know, that plays into the issue as well. You know, how much do you want produced in upstate New York nearby? What are consumers thinking about? Do they want from larger farms, or don't they care? Are they looking at the working countryside? I did speak with some of the environmental groups, you know, and I also told them that, you know, they have never really cared so much about the working countryside. It's been more of a focus on wilderness, the Adirondack Park, but not the working countryside. And, you know, and I did speak with some of the anti-fracking group leaders, and I said, you know, geez, you guys have never said a word on our behalf, you know, so are you truly interested in the countryside at this point? You know, are you interested in the grasslands? You know, and you know what's your position on dairy farms and their price? So they were kind of taken aback.
But, sure.
But you know, these are all these issues fit together.
Absolutely. No, there are lots of shades of gray. I have maybe it's sort of a stupid question, and I feel like it's going back to the beginning, but I mean, why New York in the first place? Why has New York become the yogurt capital of America?
My personal view is that because we have the cheapest milk in the Northeast, New York farmers have for the past several years received the lowest pay price of all of the states. In the Northeast, I think only Missouri and Michigan have a lower price than we do. It's the lowest price milk right on top of the Northeast Corridor. Each month I look at the milk price map and I see, like, for example, for this month, New York's dairy farmers are getting $16.32 for 100 pounds of milk. So if a yogurt company went to New England, they would have to pay $17.45 for the same 100 pounds. They would have to pay 1683 in Pennsylvania. They would have to pay $1,700. They would have to pay $1,849 for the same 100 pounds of milk in Florida. So if you want cheap milk, just come to New York. You know, for some reason, and none of us farmers have ever been able to figure out why, our prices are so much lower than all of the surrounding areas. So I think that is one reason why they've come. You know, we've got some stability here, in that you know, we have a good farm base. We do have natural resources. We have clean water, and we're close to the New York State Thruway. Any of these companies that build, except for Chobani, all of the others are going to be right on the Thruway. They will be able to transport yogurt right into New York City and beyond, Boston, very easily. In Minnesota and Wisconsin tended more towards cheese production, and you know, from an environmental point of view, I think that's probably better. You know, it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of cheese in the traditional cheese formula. It's different now with when you add fake product in, but in New York, so that's a low moisture content to be transported long distances, whereas yogurt is 3 pounds of milk to 1 pound of yogurt. It's much more of a high moisture product. So it'll be, you know, more bulky, easier to ship on the thruway here. So I think combination of factors has led to this. Maybe Chobani showed them the way. Chobani was the first that got started with I think they started with 5 employees 7 years ago. Now they're at 1,400 employees and growing.
And an Olympic sponsor, you know. Yeah. I was looking at all their ads, you know, during the Olympics.
I fell off of my chair when I saw a picture of the New York farmer on the Olympics advertising. It was great.
It was unbelievable. I remember, you know, when I first opened my store in 2006, Chobani was first introduced to me by Regional Access, who's a great local distributor based out of Ithaca, and you know, they specialize in very small production stuff, and so to think that, you know, that Regional Access introduced this, you know, yogurt to us, and now, you know, just they're everywhere, and it's such good yogurt, and it's so competitively priced. It's just amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, the protein, it's filling, you know, it's good. So, you know, when you think about it, they're hitting $1 billion in sales in just, I think, 7 years.
That's
so
amazing.
You could imagine being the CEO and starting with this concept and going from, you know,
now,
that was like a movie.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the founder of Chobani? I mean, there was a very brief profile of him in the dairy issue of Edible Manhattan. But do you know more about his background?
I know that he came from a yogurt-producing family in, he's Turkish, I believe, and came over here to study, and somehow there was a seal test plan, I believe, that he saw, and he had said to his father something like, geez, you know, American yogurt isn't that good, and they came up with, I think I read somewhere in one of the dairy publications that Chobani means shepherd, and he and one of his co-founders were riding around in a blizzard in upstate New York and decided to call it Chobani. and then they set out to make yogurt the more European way, and Americans fell in love with it. So, and this is something that Pepsi quoted at the forum. You know, their marketing people, of course, they're out sniffing around for every opportunity. You know, their market people have found that yogurt is a total possible growth sector, that Americans eat nowhere near the amount of dairy and yogurt in particular that Europeans do. We're at a paltry 13 pounds of yogurt annually, whereas in France, they're at 40 pounds, 39.2 pounds of yogurt. Even the Irish are eating 25 pounds plus of yogurt annually.
I would put myself in the higher in the higher echelons of that bracket.
Oh, you're in the higher echelons.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I eat yogurt pretty much every morning. I love it.
Most Americans don't, but you know, this is what Pepsi is teaming up with Mueller, which is Mueller, another multinational company, is the largest German dairy company known as Mueller Milch in Germany. So Pepsi will be teaming up with this yogurt manufacturer to see if they can even exceed Chobani.
Wow.
So, you know, so this is high stakes dairy, let's put it this way.
And
so there's a lot of money and a lot of jobs. So that's why Governor Cuomo, you know, devoted so much time. He pointed out the number of people who are working. I know people from my area in central New York drive all the way to Chobani every day. Some of them drive like an hour to get there for work. You know, so it has been a jobs creator. My only hope is that the dairy farmers will benefit from this, because today we have not received more in our paycheck because of the yogurt manufacturing. As a matter of fact, by a quirk of the federal formulas, it's even possible that our price can be depressed because more milk goes into yogurt than goes into fluid milk, the way the federal milk marketing orders work. So Senator Gillibrand is trying to change that, but out in rural New York, I don't see the optimism and happy glow that I got at the yogurt conference. Out in New York, the milk prices to the average farmer have really not gone up. In fact, they have gone down significantly from a year ago. Hmm. A year ago in May, we were getting $20.16 for 100 pounds of milk. Our May milk check of this year was $16.29. So our prices have actually gone down substantially despite having this yogurt boom in New York.
Well, so that's an interesting issue because, you know, if it truly is to be a boom and it is an inspiration, you know, an inspirational story, it has to, you know, affect everyone in a positive way. So
yeah.
Why would a company like Chobani that has such a great public image, you know, why are they paying the federal milk price?
Well, they have stated that they would be happy to pay more if all of their competitors will pay more.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I guess that's fair enough from a corporate point of view.
Yeah.
You know, so it would depend on the other entities also paying more. But I don't know how that will come about. You know, we have one large co-op that primarily negotiates for a lot of the milk. I think, though, that if there's more competition, that's helpful. I would like to see more of the smaller size yogurt companies grow as well. There are some fantastic companies like Siggy's, they're in all the Hannafords around the state.
And all the Whole Foods around the whole country.
Yeah, that's Siggy's is the Icelandic yogurt. You know, there are others of that size. Those are the kind of companies that are easier for co-ops of my size to negotiate with. You know, it's tough for us, a group of 60 farmers, to negotiate with Pepsi. That's, I don't even know how many billions in dollars their sales are. They, you know, the tip of the power scale is definitely in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a way of collective bargaining. The farmers had tried to form a collective bargaining effort in New York in 1998. We tried to form the Northeast Dairy Compact, and that New York City consumer groups fought to kill the compact, and they were actually led by NYPERG, who was involved in the anti-fracking movement. So I did approach the NYPERG representatives and say that, geez, you know, you say you want farmers, but you were the same group that killed collective bargaining or helped to kill the dairy farmer collective bargaining in 1998, saying that you didn't want the consumers to spend more on milk. So I think the food movement should be incorporating a little bit of the, you know, more, and I think it's starting, the average farmer, not just the artisan farmer, and what their role is in New York and in feeding New York City. So I think that's going to start. I've had a few talks with a few food leaders about that. So, you know, maybe they would give us a little backup in terms of putting some pressure on and helping us negotiate. But right now, nationally, farmers are, we're back to where we were in 2009. We had 2010 and 11 weren't bad. 2012, we are faced with drought 12. There's actually a petition being generated out of California asking the USDA Secretary Vilsack to help to call hearings in order to try to trigger some emergency milk price supports. This is there's federal milk marketing laws. It's called Section 601C18. Gives the secretary power to help set some better minimum milk prices in emergency.
Mm.
The emergency is that the food for cows and all livestock basically is in desperate condition around the country.
Most of it is grown in the Midwest.
You know, yeah, typically, we're looking, you know, maybe 160 bushels per acre. It's down, their estimate is at 123 bushels an acre, and that may even be dropped to 105 bushels per acre. So, you know, we've got fully half of rural counties in the United States are in drought emergency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just totally swung the other way out of the clear blue.
We work with a bunch of, we work solely with small farmers, and we've gotten price increases from quite a few of them who've sent along letters from their grain companies saying, this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it.
This drought is incredible. I know I was with some Missouri farmers yesterday, and a third of Missouri dairy cattle are being liquidated, as in sold to auction, probably slaughtered, because the farmers simply can't, there isn't even enough grass to feed them. It's affecting everything. People are letting, like, pet horses, just turning them loose to let them,
the drought, drought is a very dire thing. It's true. Well, and it's interesting to think about, because those milk regulations and the pricing, those were put into place, if I'm remembering correctly, to protect farmers from, overproduction and these kinds of things. So it's just ironic that now,
they call it to guarantee national food security, to guarantee the existence of a national dairy herd. But out in central New York, I am seeing problems in the countryside again, like we saw in 2009. In July, one of my neighbors burned his barns and his house down and then committed suicide. Last week, my other neighbor sold all of his cows out on September 7th. A third guy is liquidating his herd. So when I'm seeing some bad things out in the countryside, none of that was mentioned at the yogurt conference. It was only good, positive things.
Sure.
So I'm hoping some of this, the true story of all the farmers, will be mentioned in the future.
Absolutely.
Try to do that myself, and would encourage anybody who knows farmers or to talk with their political people.
And just, talk with the political people as well about the fact that, Americans should be comfortable spending a little bit more money on food, because, if we're going to truly make this system work for everybody, back in the day, people spent, 30% of their income on food, and now it's less than 10%.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just not realistic.
I did tell the governor a little, too. He must see it when he drives around. And I did mention that out of New York City, you've got Food Works, New York City Councilwoman Christine Quinn's report, and in their report, she talks about food security, and New York is actually, I looked at the figures since the last time I was on your show, and in my lifetime, the figures, we've gone from 30 million acres of farmland to 7 million today.
Wow.
So New York needs to put the brakes on losing of its farmland and farms, and taking a look at the young people for the future. So I see it happening a little bit in some sectors. We have a few young vegetable farmers who started up in our area, so I think that's good. But, we really need to work together as a state, and it shouldn't be like it was back in 1998 when the consumer groups fought, saying that we were not going to pay one penny more, and it was like a...
It's a partnership. It's not a one way. It's not a one way street.
We're all in it together. Times we've had good times. There were times when we all came together, like on September 11th. We need to maybe pull together more to make New York.
And I think it's all about education. So, thank you so much, first of all, for coming back on the show to talk with us again. You always have such an amazing top-down look at, how the whole system's functioning. So if anyone wants to continue to follow you, you are a prolific Twitter person.
Oh, I'm always on Twitter.
NY Farmer.
I have to say, after the last show, I had several people start to follow me and say that they heard about me on your show.
Fantastic.
So that was great.
well, thank you again. I really appreciate your rundown of the New York State Yogurt Summit. And although there are definitely, problems to be solved, it seems like it's definitely a positive thing for the state. So
yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. And we hope you'll join us again for a future show.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you. And everyone listening again next Monday, we'll be back with a fresh episode of Cutting the Curd.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.